Wake up, America. Time to stump the experts. Each week at this time, H.J. Heinz Company, makers of the famous 57 varieties, gives you information, please. A quartet of experts is on hand to answer your questions. Send them to Information, Please, at 570 Lexington Avenue, New York City. We may edit them a bit, and in case of similarity, you'll have to accept our judgment of who shall be paid. Now listen carefully. Any question you send in postmarked before September 20th will, if we use it, net you not $10 in war stamps, but a $50 war bond, plus the usual set of the 12-volume Britannica Junior Encyclopedia. And if we muff the question, in addition, you get $57 in war bonds and stamps, plus a regular set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. All questions remain our property. Information, Please, is presented under the supervision of Dan Golenpaul. And now, our master of ceremonies, book reviewer of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, tonight, Information, Please, doing its bit for the Treasury Department and the Third Wall Loan, broadcasts from the stage of the Lyric Theater in the great city of Baltimore. About 2,800 good citizens of Baltimore are gathered here, securing admission for the purchase of bonds in denominations of from $50 to $5,000. The total of the bonds sold, now listen carefully, amounts to $3,830,050 in purchases by individuals. And in addition, 190 seats are occupied by representatives of banking and insurance companies who have subscribed an additional total of $120,710,250. And as any good mathematician can figure out, this makes a grand total of $124,540,300, which ain't hay. And perhaps this is the time to state that Hooper S. Miles, chairman of the State Finance Committee, has just received a telegram from the Secretary of the Treasury congratulating Maryland on being the first state in the Union to pass its bond quota. And we'd like to think that we've helped them a little to do it. Now we're going to do our part as usual in our spontaneous and unrehearsed manner, supplying as our experts tonight John Kieran of the New York Sun, Oscar Levant, fresh off the Hollywood lot, and Franklin P. Adams, the Connecticut Sage. Our guest brings to a group which badly needs it beauty and charm. She is the famous playwright and congresswoman, the representative from Connecticut, Mrs. Claire Booth Luce.
And of the 4th District.
Of the what district?
The 4th District of Connecticut.
And a very good district, too.
Frank, did you vote for me last time?
Can't say I did.
Wouldn't say what you're going to do the next time, would you?
Well, we're watching you carefully, Mrs. Luce. Now, the first question, as is proper, comes from a Baltimorean, from P.J. Schmidt of this city. And he wants you to identify three Baltimoreans. This first one started as a bird in Baltimore and turned into a giant in Harlem. Who was that? Mr. Adams.
John J. McGraw.
How do you figure that out?
Well, he was an Oriole here and turned into a giant in N.Y. City.
That's exactly right, yes. Now, Mrs. Luce, you see how we work these questions and answers. Nothing to it. Now, this Baltimorean lived here in this city and later immortalized a bird in the Bronx. A bird, I believe, that's your kind of bird, Mr. Kieran, not a Bronx cheer.
Oh.
Who was that?
In the Bronx. That's the Yankee, then.
Now, we're off baseball.
Oh, all right.
We're off baseball, Mr. Levant. Let that agile mind of yours just
immortalized a bird in the Bronx?
He immortalized a bird in the Bronx. While he lived in the Bronx, he immortalized a bird, Mr. Kieran.
Edgar Allan Poe.
That's right.
The Raven.
The Raven is quite right.
There are no ravens in the Bronx.
Well, were there any ravens when he lived in the Bronx?
There might have been.
There might have been a raven or two, just enough to make a poem.
It was a stormy night, you remember.
Very possible. Now, this one was an orphan in Baltimore and later became a sultan in the Bronx. Mr. Levant.
George Hyman Ruth.
That's right. How do you figure that out?
He was an orphan. I can't figure that out. And then he became a sultan of Swat.
Yes, that's right. Well, you know what an orphan is.
Pardon? Well, I didn't think you had to have that explained.
No, I don't have to have it explained. How about this? From Charles Tanford of New York City. Let's get 2 out of 3 on this. This is about famous quarrels, family quarrels, that you'll find in either fact or fiction. Where would you find a family quarrel that took place concerning the validity of a marriage? You'll find this in a famous play. A quarrel that took place about the validity of a marriage. Mr. Levant, was that good?
Well, I don't want to get too contemporary in thought. Is that a recent play?
Yes, it is. Fairly recent. Oh, sure, quite recent. Mrs. Luce, did you have an idea?
Oh, Marge.
Well, Romeo and Juliet, there was a quarrel about the marriage.
Well, about the marriage, yes, but not about its validity, I don't think.
Oh, the women. No?
No. But
there were a lot of divorces in the women.
Yes, there were. There were more divorces than marriages, as a matter of fact. It doesn't seem possible.
No, come to think of it, he's right. There was a great quarrel about
there was. I'm right.
Was there? Mrs. Luce, yeah. you were the...
Now that I think of it.
As the author of the play, can you support Mr. Levant?
She's shy and she's
the style of which he's accustomed, of course, I mean.
Well, not enthusiastically, though there was a small quarrel about the validity of the marriage.
Well, maybe I ought to pass him, do you think? Pass Mr. Levant through?
I'm a good boy. Pass me.
How about life with father? Remember that in life with father, mother thinks the marriage is invalid because father was never baptized.
That has nothing to do with the validity of a marriage ceremony.
Well, yes, it did. She thinks something is wrong with their marriage.
No, she merely thinks she won't get to heaven. Father won't get to heaven.
Well, that's pretty bad.
That's fantasy.
No, that's right.
I believe there was a question for a moment or two, Mr. Adams. Wasn't she
worried? That's right.
Yes, I think so. Thanks, Frank. I'll pay you back after the show. Now, how about a family quarrel that took place about the division and control of a business?
The Little Foxes, yes.
That's quite right. And how about a family quarrel that concerned achievements in murder? Mr. Levant again.
Arsenic and Buck Krause and old lace.
Yes. Yes, remember the two...
You didn't say old loose, anyway.
What'd you say, Mrs. Luce?
I was saying arsenic and old lace, too.
Yes, that's quite right. You're both right. The two old ladies and Boris Karloff argue about who's killed more people. Well, that gives us 2 out of 3. Try this one from John Wigmore of Chicago. Again, get 2 out of 3. This is about famous airplane flights. What famous flight was made from and to each of these points? From Mineola, New York, to Le Bourget Field, Paris. Mrs. Luce?
Lindbergh,
yes. Perhaps the most famous flight of all. Let's see if we can remember that date. 1927.
May.
Quite right.
May?
I don't know.
It was May, I remember.
Mrs. Luce, is that right?
May 23rd, I think.
Very possibly. Now, how about this one? A flight made from Floyd Bennett Field in Brooklyn to Baldonnell Airfield in Dublin. Mr. Kieran?
Wrong way, Corrigan.
Yes. And when was that made?
Oh, that was only about...
1938.
38's right. 1938's quite right. Douglas Corrigan. And how about a flight made from St. John, Newfoundland, to Clifton, Ireland? Mrs. Luce?
That was made by,
very important flight that we sometimes forget.
Alcock and Brown.
That's quite right. Very good, Mrs.
And that was made a number of years before Lindbergh made his flight.
That's
I think it was in 1923.
A little before that, 1919. But that's very good going. We sometimes forget that was a very great and record-making flight, as a matter
John
of fact.
John Alcock and Whitten Brown.
That's exactly right. Very good. How about this one from Joan Wagner of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania? There have been lots of gentlemen whose first name is Dan. Name a Dan, D-A-N, who was shot. Mr. Kieran.
Desperate Dan McGrew.
Yes.
Dangerous Dan McGrew.
Dangerous Dan McGrew in Robert Service's poem of that name. How about a Dan who was hanged? A Dan who was hanged. Mrs. Luce.
Hanging Danny Deva in the morning.
Yes.
Kipling's poem.
Yes, quite right, Mrs. Luce. And how about a Dan who was not eaten up alive? Mr. Levant?
That's the lion's den, Dan.
That's the lion's den, Dan, yes. That's
the lion's den and the lions now are quite different.
Quite different, aren't they, Mrs. Lewis? Yes, and you'll find the story, of course, in the book of Daniel. Try this one from Dr. H.A. Finch of Philadelphia. This is a musical question, Mrs. Lewis and gentlemen. With what scientific discovery or invention do you associate each of these songs? In other words, these songs should bring to mind some scientific theory or invention or discovery or whatever. Let's have the first. I have had free hands. Was your hand still up, Mrs. Luce, or did you withdraw it?
I have such a bad ear for music.
Is it better when Mr. Adams whistles it for you?
That confuses me completely.
It does, yeah. Mr. Akira?
Sir Isaac Newton, the law of gravity, falling of the apple on his head, that's in the shade of the old apple tree.
That's right, yes, that's right. By the way, Mr. Akira, did that actually ever happen, do you know?
I never care to investigate nice stories like that.
It is a good story. Let's try the second and see what association you make. Of course, first you have to know what's being played, Mr. LeVant.
He does the first part, maybe, huh?
Hmm?
Let him do the first part and sing it, and then I'll know.
Oh, no. You ask too much for your money.
Is that it?
Well, go ahead. Tell me what it's called.
Is that the broken heart thing?
Yes.
Well, that's the man with the lights.
Well, who is that?
The electric lights?
Yeah.
Ziegfeld discovered the electric light.
Thomas Alva Edison.
Yes. Mr. Adams has just given you a piece of information.
I know that.
Highly new to you.
I know that.
You know
oh,
that?
Yeah.
Mickey Roney did it in the life of Thomas Edison.
Oh, it comes back to you now.
Yeah.
Yes, a long way around. That, however, gives us 2 out of 2 and sends us on to our third. Now I have several hands. Mrs. Lutz?
Come, Josephine, in my flying machine. Up she goes, the Wright brothers.
Wright brothers, the invention of the airplane. That's quite right. Now here is our Heinz reporter, Ben Grauer, with an observation on family life.
Not so long ago, one of the nation's leading psychologists remarked that the greatest enemy of happiness in family life is monotony. And mealtime monotony is a real threat now, with rationing and shortages and other wartime food problems confronting the homemaker. But to be forewarned is to be forearmed with a bottle of zestful Heinz 57 sauce. On the table or in the kitchen, it adds just the right touch of delicious, lusty flavor to everything from rabbits to seafoods. It gives your high-point steaks, as well as your low-cost dishes, the full-bodied, artfully blended flavor of many a rare domestic and tropical fruit and vegetable, all generously spiced and patiently aged. You'll think of scores of tasty, time- and money-saving uses for Heinz 57 sauce. So put it on your shopping list. You'll find this popular Keystone-labeled condiment costs little, but pays big returns in flavor.
Thank you, Ben Grauer. And now we'll go on with a question from Elizabeth Richard of Indianapolis. Name the characters of poetry who are described in these phrases. Let's get 2 out of 3. The first phrase is, a mighty man, a mighty man. Who is that, Mr. Adams?
The Smith.
Yes, which one? Where did he hang out?
The Smith, a mighty man, is he, by H.W. Longfellow.
Yes, quite right. The village blacksmith. Now, how about a citizen of credit and renown? Who is that? A citizen of credit and renown, Mr. Kieran?
That was John Gilpin.
John Gilpin. You'd find the story of John Gilpin where?
Well, it's a poem.
It is.
By Southey.
By Cooper.
Cooper, pardon
Cooper,
me. Pardon.
Yes. John Gilpin was a citizen of credit and renown, a train band captain, each was he.
A famous London town.
Famous ride of John Gilpin. Now, if I merely describe a character by saying, he's wonderful, where would you, Mr. LeVant?
He's wonderful or wonderful? Wonderful is a song by Gershwin.
No, because he's wonderful.
Oh, Bill, my man, my... Along came Bill, who's not the type at all.
That's very good.
Not the type. Wait, I love him because he's wonderful. That's it.
That's the fellow, yeah. Because he's just my Bill. Do you follow Mr. LeVant, Mr. Adams?
I follow him, but a long way after.
That's 3 out of 3. Try this from Mrs. W.R. Anderson of Springfield, Missouri. Who was responsible for having these people put out of the way? Who was responsible for putting Walter Raleigh out of the way? That means killing him, I imagine, Mrs. Luce.
Queen Elizabeth.
No, not Queen Elizabeth. Mr. Kieran?
Well, it was Essex, was it?
Oh.
One of those.
Can I have it now?
Yes, Mr. DeVant.
James the Foist.
Say, that's right, Mr. Levant. You astonished me.
Want me to tell you all about it?
Yes.
I can tell you about it. Well, he was a great favorite of Elizabeth's, and then Elizabeth knocked off. In the meantime, he and Essex had developed an enmity in which Essex was knocked off. Then James I let him... He was supposed to have been executed once before. He was let off for a long time. Then he was... He got it, that's all.
That's a perfect historical method. Matter of fact, Mr. Levant, you're perfectly right. And if he'd only come in ahead of you, Mrs. Luce, and you, Mr. Kieran, we would have been able to mark
that. I was there. Line. You weren't there.
Try this. Who is responsible for having Mattiotti put out of the way? Mattiotti, Mrs. Luce.
Well, it was... he was Mary Stewart's
Mattiotti?
Love.
Now, you've got the...
Oh, excuse me.
I'm sorry.
I'm so sorry. Mussolini.
Yes, Mussolini. You can see
I got him mixed up with...
Rizzio.
Rizzio.
Maybe. Yes, just because they both have Italian endings to their names. Mussolini was responsible for the murder of Mattiotti, one of the first of his many crimes, for which he is still unpunished. Franz Ferdinand was responsible for...
Who's that?
Who was responsible for putting him out of the way? Out of the way. Franz Ferdinand. Mr. Kieran.
Wasn't that the Archduke?
Well, he was the Archduke.
Yes, Gabriel Princeps, whatever his name is.
Yes. Well,
started World War I.
Gabriel something, Princepi.
Gavrilo Princep, I guess. One of the young Serbs, one of the movement of the young Serbs who assassinated Franz Ferdinand and touched off the
Sarajevo.
First war. That's quite right. Try this from Jane Louise of New York City. Can you give us, let's say, three famous people whose names are those of watercourses or bodies of water? Let me give you one example. Mr. Kieran.
Henry Hudson.
Henry Hudson. I don't mean the name of the... I don't mean the proper name, but the common name of the body of water, such as Veronica Lake.
Oh.
Mr. Adams?
Simon Lake.
Sure.
Geez. Jimmy Rivers, the prize fighter.
Jimmy Rivers, Simon Lake, the inventor of the submarine.
Emmanuel Bay, the pianist.
I don't know
he's
him.
He's with the Usher Ivers, the accompanist.
You got me there.
The excellent pianist, and his name is Bay.
Okay. Mrs. Luce?
Ethel Waters.
Ethel Waters, yes, very good. Mr. Kieran?
Rupert Brooke, the poet.
Rupert Brooke, very good. If you want to use a...
The Earl of Bath.
Pardon?
The Earl of Bath.
There's H.G. Wells, of course. There's General Stilwell, perhaps. Ernest Poole, the famous novelist.
There's Sparkling Water.
There's Sparkling Water, yes.
Lily
Pons, Mrs. Luce. Very good. Yes, try this one from Archel McGowan of Iowa City, Iowa. This, too, is going to be a musical question. I want you to identify the selection from the countermelody which the pianist is going to play. He plays the countermelody. We have to identify the selection. Whistle or hum it or sing it if you can. This is just a come-on for you, Adams. Let's have the first.
When I love, and he'll be big and strong, the man I love, faster.
That's quite right. The only thing I can't figure out is whether you are whistling, humming it, or singing it. Yes, it's Gershwin's The Man I Love. Well, that gives us one. Now, let's have the second counter melody, Mr. Kahn.
Oh, I know that. Stars and Stripes?
That's right. Very good. Yeah. Stars and Stripes Forever, Sousa's famous march. And
you want
how
me
about...
to whistle the part against it?
Pardon?
I can do the part against
you
it.
You can?
Yeah.
Hold it for next week.
All right.
And now the third and last.
He's waiting for the act to come on.
That's hard. Well, we've got two out of three. It's Begin the Begin, Cole Porter's famous song. That's the counter melody to it. That's rather subtle, I guess. How about this one from Paul Hirsch of the Bronx? Name a play or a movie in which a diplomatic representative of each of these countries is portrayed. Romania. In what play or movie do you find, Mr. Levant?
Watch on the Rhine.
Watch on the Rhine, yes. Lillian Hellman's famous play, later made into a movie. In what play is a representative of England, or perhaps more than one representative? Mrs. Lewis?
Movie?
Movie or play?
Submission, A Mission to Moscow.
I didn't see it and don't...
Yeah, that's right.
British Ambassador.
The British Ambassador, yes, that would be quite
didn't
right.
Didn't see it, but I heard about it.
How about...
Secret agent in Russia, remember that?
Queen Victoria?
William Pitt.
I was thinking of something more classic than any of these. Mr. Kieran, is there any diplomatic representative of England in Hamlet?
Ambassador, or... I don't know that an Englishman actually appears on the stage.
Yes, briefly, in Act 5, two English ambassadors appear to report to the king that the
right at the end. Oh, yes, that's
firm
right.
The firm of Rosenkrantz and Guildenstern. It's quite right.
Guilden.
How about Germany? Is there a diplomatic representative of Germany in any play or movie few years?
Yeah.
Mr. Levant?
Margin for Error.
Margin for Error, as Mrs. Luce, the author of it.
Oh, thank you so much.
What was the name of that actor? I've forgotten.
Well, Mrs. Luce, you were merely too modest to mention that.
Sure. Name was Preminger.
That's right, Otto Preminger.
Yes, that's quite right. Well, that gives us 3 out of 3. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the H.J. Hines Company has generously surrendered its commercial time so that we may talk for a few seconds about war bonds. I had originally intended to do this myself, but coming down in the train, I read a piece in the New York Sun by an up-and-coming writer named John Kieran. Mr. Kieran says it a million times better than I can, and so we've persuaded him to read to us just a paragraph or so from his column of today's date. Mr. Kieran.
It's a mistake to speak or write of making sacrifices to buy war bonds. It's no sacrifice. At the moment, it's the best investment in the world. It's nice to have a few shares of stock in corporations with long records for the paying of dividends. It's good to have a savings bank account, too. Real estate has its value, but the worth of all these things in any country rests upon the safety of that country. If these bonds are no good, then your money is no good, and your life won't be worth much either. We know all these things, but occasionally we forget them, and it's necessary to keep reminding ourselves. If it sometimes seems that the shouting about it is a little annoying, a little loud, remember that not the loudest shout can wake the dead who went out with our fighting forces. When we buy bonds, we are saving lives. When we buy bonds, we are getting insurance against slaughter or slavery.
Thank you, Mr. Kieran. And I hope that after listening to Mr. Kieran, all of us will dig deeper and deeper for victory. We'll go on with our program with a question from Samuel Sugar of New York City. And this is about modern art, Mrs. Luce and gentlemen. What modern artists have depicted the following objects on their canvases? The first object is a very unpleasant one. Cockroaches. Mrs. Luce?
Dolly.
Dolly, yes. Where do you find cockroaches in Dolly's paintings?
Well, they're implicit in every picture.
Well, maybe you see them when they're not there. They are in many of his most famous characters.
The one with the melted watches.
Yeah, the one with the melting watches. Yeah. Yes, there are quite a lot of cockroaches in an unmelted state in that picture. That's quite right. Now, how about an artist who depicts a pool table in one of his... Mr. Kieran?
Van Gogh has a pool table in Arles, the famous painting of his.
Yes, the Night Café. That's quite right. And how about one who depicts a mandolin in his canvases very frequently? Mr. Kieran again.
Picasso.
Picasso. Can you recognize the mandolin?
Yes, the bird change,
yes,
you
yes,
can.
Yes. It's the woman you don't
It's the woman you can't recognize, yes. Well, that gives us 3 out of 3. Apparently that question was too easy for you. How about this from A.S. Bert Hurley of Great Lakes, Illinois? What fictional character threw a baby at someone? Baby, Mr. Adams, B-A-B-Y. Mrs. Luce?
That is an Alice in Wonderland.
That's quite right.
When Alice throws the pig, but the pig turns into a baby as she throws it.
I think you got the wrong catcher and pitcher. It's the Duchess who threw the baby at
the
Alice.
The Duchess throws the baby at Alice.
Yes, Alice has the catcher's mitt and the Duchess has the pitcher's mitt. That's quite right. Now, what fictional character threw an old man? Mr. Adams.
Threw him downstairs.
Who did it?
Be off or I'll kick you downstairs.
Yes, but who did that? Who threw him?
That is also by Lewis Carroll.
Yes, but it isn't. But you're just trying your wiles on me, Mr. Adams. You're not going to give me the exact answer. Mr. Kieran.
I threw him down the stairs.
And who is I in the...
I was the fellow who was robbed of the roast of beef by Taffy, the Welshman.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. I met an old man who wouldn't say his prayers.
Yes, I know, but who is the I in the nursery rhyme? Good heavens, gentlemen.
I took him by the left leg and threw him down the stairs.
You have everything but who the I is. The poem has the following in it. Whither, goosey, goosey, gander, whither dost thou wander, upstairs and downstairs, and in my lady's chamber?
There I met an old man who wouldn't say his prayers.
Yes, and the I is Goosey Goosey Gander, himself, not a motion picture.
That's silly.
Oh, it is. You find this silly, Mrs. Luce? Well, I don't know. Coming from the halls of Congress, I can't quite see why you should find this so silly. What fictional character threw a mountain? He threw a mountain. Or what fictional characters threw a mountain?
Scenic changes in the Wagner opera. The men backstage. No.
Mr. Kieran?
The Titans in Greek legend threw mountains around and piled Pelion on Ossa.
Yes, that's quite right. Threw Ossa on
Pelion.
Ossa on Pelion, yes. That's the famous example of excellent pitching by the Giants, don't you think?
Boy, they miss him now.
Well, that gives us about 2.5 out of 3. Can't stump you. Try this one. This is from Mrs. Joseph Saltzman of Grand Rapids, Michigan. What's happening, according to song or story, where the blue of the night meets the gold of the day? Mr. Levant.
Bing Crosby singing on the air.
That's true. When you hear that, that's being...
Very good news when he sings. Very nice.
Good. But what is happening in the song?
In the song, you relax, you know he's going to sing. It's good.
But I want to know just exactly what happens in the song.
In the blue in the air. Yeah. I don't know what happens.
Someone waits for me is the next line.
Wow.
You just leave out all the romance.
That's silly.
Well, it may be silly, but I have to call it wrong. Now, what is happening, according to another song, when it's over? When it's over, what will happen? Mr. Kieran?
When it's over there, we won't come back till it's over there.
Yes,
George M. Cohen.
That's quite right.
Written for the First World War.
Very good. And what's happening when the moon shines over the cowshed?
Cowshed or the
mountain? Yes. Mrs. Luce?
I'll be waiting by the kitchen door.
Very good. And you stutter very nicely, Mrs. Luce. How about this one from Frank H. Lane of Bedford Hillside, Massachusetts? In connection with what activity would a person use silver nitrate? Mr. Adams.
Often with a cold or a throat trouble.
Well, more particularly, Mrs. Luce?
AgNO3.
Pardon?
Developing pictures.
No, you'd use... What would you use silver bromide for, Mrs. Lewis?
Developing pictures.
Yeah, that's the one. Now, what would you use silver nitrate for? For
a lot of things. You could paint your throat with it. It's a very high-powered...
Medical purpose. Yeah. Cauterization, mainly. Yeah. How about silver sulfide?
Also.
Also
that's
what?
Pictures.
Just also.
No. You housewives use it for cleaning silver. I think that sends $57 in war bonds
to
Mr. Lane. And a set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. And I guess that's all we have time. Thank you, Mrs. Luce, for your brilliant cooperation at our bonding this evening, during which the H.J. Hines Company has paid out $57 in war bonds and stamps and one set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Next week, continuing with our bond tour, we'll broadcast from the stage of the Mosque Theater in Newark, New Jersey. We had hoped to announce as our guest the Vice President of the United States, but we have just received word from Mr. Wallace's office that he will be unable to join us next week. As we've not had time to secure another guest, you'll have to watch your daily newspaper for the announcement. Remember, ladies and gentlemen, that when you send your questions, don't forget to send the correct answers also to Information Please at 570 Lexington Avenue, New York City. And now, Ben Grauer.
In behalf of H.J. Hines Company, makers of the famous 57 varieties, I wish you good health and good evening. Join us again next week at this same hour, and remember, back the attack with war bonds.